Hello and welcome to Word Perfect. You're listening to Siren Radio. My name's Steve Court, and we're going to be in for another afternoon of conversation with one of the many, many excellent writers that we've come across through Inspired.com. Today, we're recording from home, as many of you are aware, having to record our interviews not in the studio as we do normally. And I saw a fantastic thing today that's just made me think I should give out a little pre-warning to all of you listening at home. Those of you might have seen it. So we are recording on Zoom. So I think it's very, very, very important that you know that I am not a cat. We are producing radio in a way that is unlike anything that we've ever had to do before. So it does mean it's presenting itself with some certain challenges. We are proud to say that we are overcoming. If you listen to Siren Radio regularly, please get onto our website and have a look at the link that's on there. So the Department for Digital Culture is looking at how we are applying ourselves and how we are doing things with this wonderful format. And so your feedback would be greatly appreciated. So please go there, look for the survey link and just complete the short survey on there. If you are over the age of 18 and you live in the UK, there's also the potential chance that you could win one of 20 £50 Amazon vouchers. So it's well worth your time if you're happy to give us some help. Now, today's show, like always, is going to have a great writer with us. And we are joined today by Mal Lester. So hello.
Hello.
Welcome to the show. For those people listening at home, Mal, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I was brought up in Withinshaw, which is a big housing estate in Manchester, and had a very happy childhood. And I've also had a very rich career doing many different jobs, finally finishing up as an academic. It was part of my job to do writing, to write books and papers, which was great. And since I've retired, I've carried on doing some writing. Sadly, I only had one child, had two miscarriages. And the child I had, my wonderful Jane, is who the book is about that we'll talk about later. I'm married to somebody called Roger Twelve Trees, who's mad about old cars. And we have two dogs who I hope won't be too noisy in the background.
This is another one of those things I was just mentioning, being in the challenges of recording radio from home, isn't it? Is keeping dogs and children away from microphones. I've read Jane's journey. Obviously, I was part of helping to publish the book, and it is a brilliant, brilliant read on so many levels. It's well written, it's well put together, but it tells such an amazing story. Tell me a little bit about what inspired, well, it's difficult to say what inspired that book, because that book I think stands alone on itself, but what inspires you as a writer outside of Jane's journey? What makes you want to pick up a pen?
Yeah, it's a good question, and I don't really know the answer to it, but I do like many writers, I think, just have that that urge to write and to create something purely out of words and get that satisfaction from doing that. So I can't really say other than that. What inspired me to write Jane's Journey was three things. One, I wanted to honour my wonderful daughter. Two, I wanted to be helpful to other families facing similar difficult situations of a life-changing or terminal diagnosis for their child. And also for it to be a kind of case study to help health professionals to nurse and look after adults with learning difficulties. And I've done that by having an appendix to the book.
Yeah, and I think having read it and having looked at it, that description of it is the perfect description. It really is those three things in such a strong measure. Like I say, it's an interesting read, just as sort of a chronological story on its own, but the fact that there are those bits of advice and those bits of evidential things that people who are going through something similar might be able to look at and either see a path to somewhere different or to realize that what they're going through isn't something that they need to suffer with on their own. It's a very, very nice is the wrong word, but it's a very nice book to engage with in that way. I mean, how did it feel for you writing it? Because it's such a personal thing.
Yeah, I think it probably was quite cathartic, really, because you have to face things rather than bury them. I didn't sleep very well when I was doing it, but fortunately my sleep pattern has improved since I've finished it. So
there's definitely an element of stress to producing it then.
And there was some, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's got, like I say, just the content of it is so, so personal and so, I mean, some of it must have been so difficult to, you read it and I think it's so easy to just read something, but then when you think that you actually had to go through that in order to be able to write this, it puts a very different slant on the book. But it really is great. So, I mean, who would you say the book is really for? Who is the target audience for that?
I think it's quite a wide target audience because, and I've certainly found by the responses I've had, which have been really uplifting, that many people get an easy, good book to read because it's got such a human interest story. So that's just, if you like, the general public. But also, as I say, families. I mean, it's got a recommendation by the founder of the Childhood Tumour Research Centre at Nottingham University. And, you know, families that are involved with that centre, I hope they might get some kind of help from it. And also with the appendix, health professionals of all kinds, occupational therapists, nurses, and so on. But above all, just the general public.
Yeah, and I do think I'd agree with that. I think it is one of those books where you could just pick it up and it is just, it's a good read. But I think if you've got something specifically within your life that kind of fits within the realms of what was happening with yourself and with Jane's kind of story, it's a definite help. And it's got a real, and it's got an incredibly positive outcome to things, hasn't it? Because I think the whole book is obviously, Jane was a bit of a medical marvel, really, in what happened.
She was, and it's very positive in the sense that she's had a rich life and a much longer life, nearly 50 years, than was expected when she had her first brain tumour at 18 months old. And her life was full of good things, travel and friends and marriage and motherhood. So it is positive, I think. And she was very positive.
Which really comes across in the book, is it's got that, it almost seems that you're able to find more positivity the harder things become, and the more challenges you're presented with, where most people allow those things to beat them down, it seemed to be another catalyst for you guys to just step up and do more. And it's a really, really incredible story, if nothing else, for people to read and just take it as just a story. It's fantastic to read, but to, like I say, to know that it's real, and also to have heard some of the medical professionals talking in a way where Jane's story has helped to change things and really make things different in the way that stuff's now applied as well.
Yeah, that's incredible. That's wonderful.
So it's a fantastic, fantastic story. So if you are at home and you're interested in getting yourself a copy of this incredible book and having a look, there's a few routes that you can go down. So the easiest one is to go straight to Amazon, search for Jane's Journey. If you put Mal Lester, Lester as in the city, you will find the book really easily on there and you can get yourself a copy. If you're looking for other routes and you want to find something else, if you go to www.impspired.com and you will find on our website there is an authors section, Impspired Authors, and Jane's Journey is one of the books that you can find on that list in there. And there's a link straight through again to Amazon to be able to get hold of your copy on there. And I would 100% recommend you do that. It is a great book. I've actually got it sat right in front of me right here, and it is fantastic. Jane, would you mind sort of sharing a little bit of the book with us? I think you've got a short reading to do.
Yeah, I thought I'd read from the first chapter, from when I first learned what the diagnosis was. Jane had been walking really well at 18 months old, and then she suddenly started to stumble quite a lot, and this was at the hospital to find out why. A nurse led us to a small, quiet room with three comfortable armchairs, and we were joined by a large, dark-suited man. "I'm Mr. Jones," he said, almost whispering in a surprisingly soft voice. "Jane has a growth on the back of her brain. I'm the neurosurgeon here, and I will remove it for her." Fear spread, silent as cancer, in my chest. Is it serious? I asked him. We will have to wait until after the operation to see what it is. When will you operate? We'll admit Jane on Monday and I'll operate later in the week. We were quiet for a moment. The only sounds were made by Jane, who was sitting on the floor, absorbed in playing with a crate of toys. Do you have any more questions? I shook my head, too shocked to think of any of the things I might have asked. As soon as Mr. Jones left, the nurse came and sat on the chair beside me. She patted my arm. We have a mother and baby unit on the ward, she said. Would you want to sleep here while we have Jane with us? Oh, yes, yes, please, I said. I'll book you in from Monday. Bring clothes for yourself. We have everything Jane will need. Her voice and eyes were kind and concerned. She gave me some information leaflets and asked if I would like a cup of tea, which I declined, just wanting to get home. After helping Jane into her coat and gloves and strapping her into her pushchair, I walked out of the hospital into a cold grey drizzle, stumbling towards the bus stop in a daze. Crossing a busy road for the second bus, I stepped off the pavement without looking. A car which narrowly missed us gave several angry hoots. Hastily, I stepped back, fighting tears, while Jane looked after the car with interest. During the weekend, Jane began to vomit. As I cleaned and comforted her, I tried to keep at bay the recurring and overwhelming image of Mr. Jones cutting into her brain.
Wow. That's it's interesting to hear you read it as well, because it adds a new level and a new layer to having read it so many times myself already. It's some powerful stuff, but like I say, the book is just fantastic. It takes you through those harrowing moments. As a parent, that must have been horrific.
It was a very hard time, that first tumour. She was such a little tot and so much loved.
Yeah, it's incredible to hear that. But like I say, in the book, you find levels of, considering that's so early on in the story, and it's such a harrowing moment, and you know, such a hard moment to, and even to hear you read it, it's added to that as well. It's you find such levels of positivity and so much happiness and so many good things that it's just a fantastic story. It's just incredible.
I'm very lucky to have such a good family as well, you know, who family and friends who have always been very supportive. So that helped. I mean, my dad had recently been made redundant, which he felt very bad about. But then he did, you know, when this happened to Jane, he was able to be with me and give me lifts and be at the hospital and really helped me through it. So he actually said he was glad he didn't have work to go to now, because he could help me, and all through. And then in a very last illness, my husband, you know, welcomed him here very kindly and very tenderly to our home, and helped me to nurse her and so on, and give her a good time. Actually, she enjoyed her last months. But you know, everybody was really kind and supportive. I was very lucky in that way.
No, that is brilliant. I think it's a real huge thing, isn't it, to have that level of support around you, to have a family around you who can help to shoulder some of that. Not just the practical things, but the emotional side of it as well. I think you need that level of support. And then it comes across in the book. Some of the photo sections are fantastic. I'd love some of the pictures. There's some brilliant brilliant photographs of family gatherings and things like that, and you really do get that feeling of family and togetherness, and it's a real nice addition to the book there as well. I think there's quite a lot of people have now seen the book, haven't they, and read the book. I know you've got quite a lot of people out to get that. So have you been getting some good feedback from people?
Tremendous feedback, really good feedback. And the one thing that most people say is it was so easy to read, I couldn't put it down. And that's a wonderful thing to hear as a writer, that people couldn't put your book down. So, yeah, it's been good, the feedback.
Well, I remember when you sent it through to me, we'd had a conversation and would I be interested in getting involved with publishing it? And you sent it over to me, and I opened it almost minutes after your email arrived. And I pretty much did exactly the same thing. I think I read it in almost one sitting, probably split over. I think I read end of one day and the beginning of the next. And then I sat there thinking, can I reply to you yet? I was so keen to come back to you and say, yes, I want to do it, that I actually had to sort of pause myself for a while because I thought it's going to look like I haven't even read it because I'm coming back to you that quickly. But it was one of those things where once I'd started reading, I just wanted to know what came next.
That's lovely. Thank you.
So that's brilliant. And well, it's we've reached the point in the show where it's time for us to take our first little break, which is our first musical break. And as always, we like to get our guests to select a track. And Mal has done the same thing for us today. So the track you selected is a Fleetwood Mac song, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And the reason I've chosen this is that my husband is such a huge fan of Peter Green and Eric Clapton that I've chosen this for him.
Amazing. Good reason. Good choice. So Mal, do us the honours and introduce the song.
So it's Fleetwood Mac, Need Your Love So Bad.
Fantastic. So Fleetwood Mac, Need Your Love So Bad.
Someone's hand to lead me through the night. I need someone's arms to hold and squeeze me tight. Now when the night begins, I'm out of bed. Because I need your love so bad. I need some lips to feel next to mine. I need someone to stand up and tell me when I'm lying. When the lights are low and it's time to go, that's when I need your love so bad. So why don't you give it up and bring it home to me? Or write it on a piece of paper, baby, so it can be read to me. Tell me that you love me and stop driving me mad. Oh, because I need your love so bad. Need a soft voice to talk to me at night. I don't want you to worry, baby. I know we can make everything all right. Listen to my plea, baby. Bring it to me, because I need your love so bad.
Welcome back to Siren Radio. You're listening to Word Perfect. My name's Steve Court, and we're joined today by Mal Lester in the studio, where we're talking about her history as a writer, her back catalogue of work, and hopefully what's to come next as well. So before the break, we were talking there, Mal, about Jane's journey and some of the process of writing that and getting into that. But what I wanted to know now is, what got you started as a writer to begin with? What was your first introduction to being a writer?
I suppose the very first thing wasn't written at all, but my twin brothers, were 4 years younger than me, and I used to tell them stories a lot. And we used to have this long journey with a big break in the middle of it. And to keep them happy, I would pass the time by telling them stories. So suppose that was the start of it, really. And then when I was a young woman, I worked for an anti-racist organisation in Handsworth, and became part of the movement towards a multicultural education. And so I started writing stories with black princesses and black fairies, and was actually interviewed on Woman's Hour about that book. So that was all very thrilling and worthwhile. And then, of course, when I much later became an academic, it was actually part of my job to write books and papers, but they were non-fiction, and I really wanted to get back to fiction. So I knew it was very hard to get published, so I quite craftily made use of my contacts with education publishers who published my academic stuff, and wrote children's stories with educational activities attached to them so that they would be used in school. And I suppose I wrote probably about a dozen of those collections. And the one I'm most proud of, I wrote one called Special Stories for Disability Awareness that was actually shortlisted for an award. It didn't actually win, but it was very interesting. It was like we were all sitting in the British Library around, you know, waiting to see who would win with all this wine sloshing about. And Jane was with me, and she'd written a chapter in it about growing up with a disability. And they gave us all a certificate, including Jane, who was very thrilled to get this. That was how I was able to write fiction as part of my job. And then since I've retired, of course, I've been able to write what I want, really, which has included both fiction and non-fiction.
And so in terms of stuff that you've written since you've retired, then in the more sort of fictional creative sort of areas, what sort of things have you produced so far?
Well, one thing is that Jane's son, my grandson, Aidan, he has Tourette's syndrome. So I wrote a book from a child's perspective, from a child's point of view, about Tourette's syndrome, called Can I Tell You About Tourette's Syndrome? And I've been very pleased because that's been translated into various different languages. So I know that it's being used all over the place. So that's one of the things.
It's brilliant to hear you do that as well, because I think so many people struggle to blur the line between the medical or the clinical or the academic writing and creative stuff. Whereas it sounds like you've for years have been able to kind of blur that line very easily,
or at least sort of bring them both together, you know, with sort of story, but also educational activities, that kind of thing. And I still do, I mean, I was asked by Sage Publishers to do one for their study skills series, and I did one about Get a Better Grade, which I really enjoyed doing. I usually enjoy the fiction more, but I did enjoy that one. So that's been another fairly recent one. But Jane's journey is very different to everything else, because I've never done a memoir or, you know, any biography or autobiography. So so it was a new challenge, really.
And how did you find the process of that? In what way did you find it different to your normal style of writing?
I found that I'm quite good at organisation because of being an academic. I've had to be fairly sort of logical and rational. And I find it sometimes quite difficult to free up the more creative side. But I found that being good at organising material was really helpful, because at the start, you feel so overwhelmed. There's so much in a life, so many incidents, so many stories that it's, you know, how do you pick it out? And so I kept the focus on the medical side and somehow was able to organise the material through her lifetime in a way that worked.
Yeah, brilliant. Again, so that where I was saying before about blurring the lines between the academic and the creative, you've once again shown how those skills have proven useful.
Yes.
Together, so no, that's fantastic. So, in terms of creative work, then, what if you had to go away now and write something? What sort of things are capturing your interest at the moment? What would you want to write about?
Well, actually, several years ago, I did the first draft of a novel called An Absolute End, and in it, some twins developed their own private language to describe their shell collection, which is very important to them. And somehow, I don't know why, it just got shoved into a drawer. I think I was in a university writing group and I got quite critical feedback, and I think it sapped my confidence a bit, which is something, I mean, I would recommend joining writing groups as a way of people getting started, or if they've got writer's block, but that is one thing to be a little bit aware of, not to allow your own confidence to be knocked. But so maybe that was the reason. For whatever reason, it got put in a drawer, and I have started to think that maybe I'd like to have another go at that, and it would need expanding, and because it's quite short. So that's one thing. And I've also thought, because in lockdown I've been doing an awful lot of reading, and I've been reading escapist stuff rather than good literary stuff, if you like. You know, I've been reading detective novels and stuff, and I have thought maybe I'd quite like to try a popular thriller. So that's another possibility.
Looking at something as a longer project then, so we're definitely looking at something down the novella route rather than poetry or something like that. So,
well, I do belong to a writers group called the Hub Writers, which meets in Sleaford at the Hub Centre there, and it's mainly poetry. It doesn't have to be, you can write what you want, but somehow we mainly do poetry, and I don't think of myself as a very good poet. I think of myself as very much learning and a bit out of my comfort zone, but that's a good thing sometimes. So I have come to write poetry through that, and had the odd one published in through Inspired, because you publish poetry, don't you?
You do, yes. Yeah, definitely. Which, you know, leads me to a nice segue into a bit that I need to do now, which is just to update everyone at home about what they can do if they want to get involved or they want to do something. So if you go to www.impspired.com, you will find there is a whole plethora of stuff on there. So there is all of our back catalogues of our issues, so you can go and read some of the writing that we've already had. So we tend to accept short stories and poetry on the whole. We've had a few essays and a few other pieces in there, but it is predominantly a short stories and a poetry journal. So you can find all of our back catalogues on there. You can also find some of our regular features. So we've got the Connection Degree 3 written by Nicholas Sampson, which is a fantastic piece where he takes three seemingly disconnected pieces of art and sort of takes us on a journey through the themes and explores them in a way where we go full circle from one through to the second to the third and all the way back round to where we started again. And it's some incredible stuff where he sees things in artwork that we just hadn't noticed before. So they're worth a read. We've also got on there the Tales from the Tranquility Tea Room, which is a writer's journal about his experience of exactly what Mal was just talking about, of being part of a writer's group. And it's sent in anonymously to me every month. I mean, I know who it is, but it is sent in anonymously, and it's posted up there. But there's some fantastic stuff, which if you are getting into writing, or even if you're an experienced writer and you understand what the writers' groups can be like, it just speaks of so much truth. It is a great thing. And one of the things he actually talks about in there are the individual characters that go to it. And I think, Mel, you touched on this when you said about people at a group knocking your confidence.
Actually, that wasn't this group. This was many years ago when I was trying to write this first novel. The group I go to now, the Hub group, are not not very critical. In fact, some people say they'd like them to be a bit more so, because that's how you learn in a way. But they're not. They're very appreciative. We all just enjoy each other's work in a very sort of positive way, really.
No, and I think sometimes that's a better place to be at. I've run a creative writing group in Lincoln for, I think this would have been our 16th year if we'd actually been allowed to play this year. So I don't know. Can we say it's 16, or do I have to stop at 15 and start counting again when we go back? I don't know. But we've run there, and actually we actively removed kind of critique from the group, because we got to a point where we felt like, actually, were any of us really qualified to give anything other than an opinion? And actually, our opinion can be damaging. Like you've just said, people come along, especially if they're early in the writing process, it can be enough to make them stop.
Yes. But if you get one like yours and one like the Hub, then I would encourage people to join, because it keeps you writing, and writers write. You know, that's what you've got to carry on doing.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, the reason the Lincoln Creative Writers one first started was that I was a playwright initially. I wasn't a poet at all. In fact, actually, when I first started the writers group, I would go as far as to say I really disliked poetry. It was something at school where it was always about some dead World War One poet that I couldn't understand, or about something that I couldn't capture my interest. And I really struggled with poetry. I couldn't understand the form and the structure. And I met an amazing guy called Chris Sanderson, who's from Louth in Lincolnshire. And he was like a teacher. He knew everything, and he knew everybody, and he knew all of the writers, and he was able to point me in a direction that just gave me a bit of purpose. So I came along to do the playwright sort of creative writing, and he was going to do the poetry side. And all of a sudden I found myself loving it and started writing. And so it can open new doors and new avenues, and definitely create new ways for you to engage in writing, which you've sort of mentioned yourself with the poetry there, that you're doing things now that wouldn't be your normal.
Yes, slightly out of my comfort zone, but I think getting better gradually. But I also think as well, I mean, I joined in the first place because having retired, I found out I had a sort of writer's block, and I wasn't writing, and that troubled me because I wanted to write. And so I joined it as a way of seeing if that would help with the writer's block. And it did, because you're given a task each month. And so you sort of have to do it before the following month, when you don't have to, but you really try. And so it got me going again.
And I think it's a great thing. I've had lots of stuff where I'd probably say for months and months on end, I've not used a single thing that I've written at a writer's group. But then all of a sudden, I'll be writing a play or doing something different, and little bits have crept in from there. Or you'll hear a word that somebody else uses that you don't normally use yourself, and you think, oh, that's a beautiful word, or I love that, or that's created a whole new idea in my head. And it's great for inspiration, isn't it? So where did you say this is? Was one in Sleaford, the Hub Writers Group?
Yes, yeah.
Because I think our groups actually share a member. So Matt Spittles is a member of that group.
Yeah, Matt's a wonderful poet, I think.
Yeah, he's fantastic. He's been coming actually to the Lincoln Creative Writers Group for probably the majority of those 16 years now. He's a great writer. But and that's the other thing it does, is it creates these connections, and you meet new people. And
he
writes in a way I wish I could, because he's very much into kind of nature and the outdoors, and which I just can't write as much as I would love to. It feels wrong, whereas actually he does it so effortlessly that, you know, it's beautiful to just experience somebody else's process.
Inspiration, isn't it? It's the natural world. But he's a really nice guy. And as you say, you do meet some interesting and nice people as well in these groups. Yeah. So there is that sort of social element to it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's what we meet in the function room of a pub. So we tend to have those of us who've now learned that if you arrive an hour early, there's an hour you can have a drink with some friends before it starts. And then we have the workshop, and then some of us stick around for a little while afterwards as well. So it becomes a real social event, because writing can be a very lonely process, can't you?
Yes, it can. It can. It is a lonely process in a way, isn't it? But so it's a one way of sharing that writing world.
Yeah. I've always said it's like sharing my misery. I like to meet once a month and share my misery with other people.
Yeah. Yeah, funnily enough, I went once to your Lincoln group, and we were shown photographs, and one was of a beach of white sand, and that made me write what I'm going to read as my second piece, which was about Jane and us in the Gambia, and it so it came naturally into the book.
Well, how about this for some seamless segueing? Because the very next thing on my list to get you to do is actually to do a second reading. So it seems like the perfect time to do that.
Amazing. So, as I say, this is when she was an adolescent and she was beginning to be conscious of not having much hair and a scar at the back of her head where she'd had her first operation. And we'd bought an expensive wig which had blown off in the very first day. So she wouldn't wear a wig anymore. So she used to wear berets, which looked nice, but this is what happened when we went to the Gambia. Jane's friendliness soon made us known to the equally friendly Gambians and to the holidaymakers in our resort. On the final day of our holiday, we went to the local beach where we saw a group of Gambian women braiding each other's hair using beads of many colours. They wore brightly patterned long robes, a ring of colour against the endless white sands. They noticed us watching them and called us over, offering to braid Jane's hair. She had sufficient hair on the top of her head for them to make braids, weaving in additional hair which they had with them. They also used bright beads, including many turquoise ones. It took several hours to do the braiding, but full of chatter and laughter in the warm sunshine, the time passed very pleasantly. Jane was the centre of warm attention, embellished with endearments, and the result of their work looked wonderful. Jane's braids, hanging down to her shoulders, covered her scar. Back at our resort, the Gambian staff and the holidaymakers complimented Jane, who was clearly pleased, tossing back her braids proudly. The following day on the aeroplane, as we walked to our seats, everyone applauded. Jane smiled, lifted her chin, and progressed through the acknowledgements like a queen. On the flight home, we were smiling so much that our faces ached, and when we got home, I found an Afro-Caribbean stylist who, when necessary, would rebraid Jane's hair. So that was written at your one.
Well, there you go. You see the positive outcomes of going to a writer's group. So, yeah, I mean the story for Jane's journey really is incredible. And if you're sitting at home and you've heard that and you want to read some more of it, then you can go to directly to Amazon and search for Jane's Journey. Look for the book by Mal Lester, or you can go to inspired.com and you can go onto the Inspired Authors page. And again, you'll find Jane's Journey listed on there. Beautiful blue cover with a photograph of Jane on the front of it there. Is
Yes,
that
I was very pleased that Inspired allowed me to have a turquoise colour because that was Jane's favourite colour. So I'm really pleased that it's turquoise or a very pale,
Yes.
pretty blue colour.
There we go with some accurate descriptions of the cover there, saying that it's turquoise. Because whereas I fit into probably old school male there of just going, I see blue, red, and green, and everything else is just a variant of that. Right? And my wife keeps having to remind me what color our sofa is because I say it's green, but she says it's teal, which apparently is more like blue. So there's a debate that we can have for days.
Yes.
So we talked a little bit earlier on about some of the sort of projects you might like to go back to. Is there anything particularly that you are working on at the moment?
Well, there's two things that I'm about to start on, actually. One is that Sage, the publisher of the Get a Better Grade, are doing a big project to do with distance learning because, of course, that's very needed at the moment. And they've asked if I'd like to be involved as an editor or an author, and I've said I don't really want to be an editor, but I wouldn't mind being an author, some part of it. So I'm just waiting to hear what it is exactly that they want me to do. And I think it's probably be going to be on critical thinking, and trying to make it interactive so it can be used in this sort of distance mode. And also, I thought I would look at some relevant magazines and nursing journals to see if I can write some short pieces about nursing an adult with learning difficulties, because I'd like that to be more widely read. I mean, I think it's important, and it would also publicise the book.
Which never hurts, does it?
No. So, and then, you know, that those are in the immediate term. And then longer term, as I was saying earlier, I think I would like to try to go back to the first draft of my novel.
Fantastic. Well, it's been amazing to speak to you, Mel, but it does bring us to the end of today's show. So we're left with one task, which is just to introduce our final song, which I will hand over to you for.
Yes, it's Rod Stewart, Maggie, Maggie, May. And the only reason I've selected it is I used to play it quite a lot when I was younger, and it just reminds me of being young.
Well, that seems like a great thing to do. So thank you very much, Mel, for joining us. Incredible to hear about yourself and about the book Jane's Journey. So get yourselves out there if you want to get a copy of it. But this is us leaving you for today. We will hopefully be back with you again the same time next week. This is Rod Stewart, Maggie May.
Rock and roll band.